Episode Simply Focus mit Elva Czerny and Dominic Gilda for Live and Joyandy.
We've got a brand new exciting episode for you. Please welcome your host, Elfie Czerny and Dominic Godin.
Welcome back, everyone. This is episode number 57, and we say a joyful hello from Atlanta, Georgia.
We are here and sitting at a table with Adam Frohr. We arrived yesterday afternoon and had a lovely time here. We went out for a double date yesterday evening, went for pizza, and had just a great day today with talking and playing with the kids and having food and, yeah, just enjoying time together.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us here, Adam, and for sharing your wonderful kids with us and our daughter, who had the joy of playing with your kids yesterday while we were out for dinner.
It's been a pleasure to have you here. We're glad that you could be here with us.
Adam, you're Associate Program Director and Associate Professor at Mercer University, and we're so happy that we can be here. And before we go back to Europe, have you on a podcast.
Thank you.
What is it that fascinates you with solution focus?
A lot of things fascinate me about solution focused, but I think one of the things that is kind of at the forefront of my mind right now is this idea, and I think sometimes it's called the stance of a therapist, or sometimes it's talked about as how do we view the person that we're sitting across from. But I think for me, I think one of the things that's really, really fascinating is that my perception of the person that I'm talking with inherently will change the questions that I ask. It will change my level of curiosity. It will change how it is that I engage with them. And so one of the things that, and I work closely with Elliot Connie, and one of the things that he and I have been talking a lot about is the importance of viewing each person that we're sitting with as somebody who is worthwhile. I think he would even use the word as somebody who is a hero. And I think that having that perception of each and every person that we encounter really changes the way that we interact with them. And I think that's a fascinating concept.
Oh, I love what you say, and this is so close to my heart, because I love to use the word brilliance, and I love to talk to brilliant people, and it makes such a huge difference.
You say that this changes the questions you ask, or the questions that we ask, or that people ask. So in what way do the questions change?
Yeah, I think each time, and I hope this makes sense, but I think each time we're talking to somebody, in some sense, there's at least two different stories or two different versions of them that we could be talking to. And really, I think there's an infinite number of versions that we could talk to. But we simultaneously in our lives have moments and experiences where we are at our very best. And we also have experiences where we wish we could have been better than we are. And I think that oftentimes as a therapist, people come and talk to me and they come with the expectation that I'm going to ask them about what's going wrong with them or what their problems are or when they have not been at their best. And I think that when I take the time to really get to know them, they want to tell me, or they expect to tell me about those times. And I think it's my job to work really hard to say, but there's also these other moments in your life where you are at your very best, or where you are the kind of person who you want to be. Could you tell me about that person and when you are able to be that kind of person? And I've found that the more that I can ask those kinds of questions, and it's a tricky task because you have to listen to whatever it is that they come telling you that they want to talk about. But you also have to help them to say, but there might also be another version that I need to hear about as well. Could you tell me about that version? And so I think one change that it makes is that I have to work hard. But oftentimes I've found throughout a conversation, we just begin to hit a stride where they start seeing themselves in that way, or they start feeling comfortable telling me about that version of themselves. And then it changes because I get to be minutely curious about, tell me the smallest little details about how you are that amazing person. Or like you mentioned, tell me about in the minute details about your brilliance and how you use that brilliance.
It reminds me of the early days when they had problem-free talk in the beginning and just talked about how people spent their lives, and it probably was not that people were at their best spending their lives, but just like people spending their lives and doing many, many good things, and then picking up from those words in their conversations and kind of helping them see that there are other sides of the story. How do you do that exactly when people come and tell you, let's say you ask a best hopes question, for example, and tell you, well, you know, there are so many problems here and I would love to have it different, but I don't know how and why and move. How do you get them to see the other side?
Yeah, I think that's a really important question. Typically, it, I would say, happens in stages. And I would say that oftentimes when we begin with a best hopes, people will tell me a lot of times about the absence of something, right? They'll say, I don't want to feel like this anymore, or I don't want to be miserable, or whatever. And so one of the first stages is just to ask that instead question of what would you like to be present instead of that? And that can be a tricky question. That can be hard for people. And so persistence comes into play at that point. But usually you can get to some kind of a thing, right, where they'll say, like, I just want to be happy. And I would say, I would spend time asking follow-up questions about that. And in some sense, the question, and you guys were at the conference a couple of weeks ago, and I kept asking the question of how come, right? And I probably wouldn't ask a client in that way, but in some sense, I want to know, why do you want to be happy, right? How come you chose the word happy? And usually it gets to a place that's more meaningful to them, right? When they'll start saying things like, because then I can be the kind of parent that I want to be, or I could be the partner that I want to be, or I could even be the employee that I want to be, right? And so all of a sudden, happiness changes to why they want to be happy. And when I get to the why, then I can begin to ask those minute questions around what difference would it make if you were the kind of parent that you wanted to be, right? And all of a sudden, we're kind of at the core of, and people will say then things like, I can pass on the legacy that I got, or I can help my children become who they want to be. And being a person who's passing a legacy, or being a parent who is helping your child to become who they want to be, is a very different place than I just want to be happy. And so I think there's kind of steps to getting there.
So you're not only asking what differences would that make, or how would that show in your life, but also how come this is important for you, and kind of, well, how come this is meaningful, or what does it make meaningful?
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that, and I saw you kind of struggle with that word meaning, and I have kind of gone through that same struggle, because I don't think that we're necessarily in a psychodynamic way trying to get at meaning making, but we are in essence trying to say, why is this important to you? Why should we spend an hour talking about this thing when we could talk about an infinite number of things? Help me understand why this is the most important thing that you and I could spend our time talking about.
And then really connecting it to the actual life and behavior of the person. This is what I heard when it comes to, so, well, how come you want to talk about happy? Well, because then I will be the father I would like to be, or the mother I like to be for me.
Yeah.
Well, and then we talk about a whole different thing, because then we don't talk about being happy, but then we talk about me as a person in an actual role in my life where I could and want to do things in a different way.
Yeah. I think one of the common criticisms or critiques about solution focused is that we just are trying to find a solution, right? Or that we're just trying to fix whatever problem they come in with. And I think that when we get to this place of it being about my life and who I want to be, then it becomes much less about a specific fix for a problem, but it is who I am as a person. And if I can become who I want to be as a person, then I'll interact with all of my problems in a different way.
And how do you make them aware of instances where this has happened before?
That's a good question. Well, I would probably push back a bit and say, I don't make them aware of it, but I understand the essence of your question. And I would say, simply by asking, right? And I would say, if we go with that example of, right, I would be the father that I want to be, then I would say, can you tell me about a time where you have been that father and what difference that has made to the interactions with your child or your children? And so one of the things that I love about this idea, and I think, again, this kind of gets to one of the critiques of solution focused, is that it's only future focused. And I think I would say, when we talk in this way, really what we're doing is we're focusing on change, and change could have already happened, right? These are those, you know, unique experiences or the exceptions or whatever, or it can be in this conversation, something could be different. So that could be very present focused, or it could be in the future. And so one way is to ask them about times when that would, or you can simply just move on to the next preferred future description, right? And say, suppose suppose you woke up tomorrow and you were the kind of father that you wanted to be, somebody who is passing this legacy on, what would be the very first sign that would let you know that this was that day that the legacy began to get passed? And so all of the regular things that we talk about, but it's now about this person. And I think that the language changes in that miracle question from an arbitrary, the problems that brought you here are gone, to you are now a person who is passing a legacy on.
And how does that change your perception of the person? Because we started with, we can have a different perspective about the person, then we ask different questions.
Yeah, I would say it changes me because I get to see who they really are and who they really want to be. And so I get to spend my time sitting with somebody, to use Elfie's word, sitting with somebody who's brilliant, right? And it changes because now I get to be curious and I get to say things like, how did you become a legacy passer, right? And I now get to learn from them. And all of a sudden, instead of working really hard, I simply just get to say, please just tell me everything you can about being this amazing person.
Wow. And what usually happens to me is that I learn so much in those conversations also for my life. And sometimes maybe I would be a legacy passer too. Like I learn from them compared to when I see a person coming in with a problem and kind of having this difficult life. So it really changed perspective. One question that I always had or still have, especially when people have many conversations after another, and it can be tiring to talk to people, and there comes another number 550, and how do you prepare yourself to have another perspective in life, but also just before the conversation?
Yeah, I think you're asking a really pivotal question. And I think that one of the things people have started asking us, that question of how do you begin to see people in this way? And really what I would say is practice, right? And I would say it's not going to happen in the therapy room or in the consulting room or in the medical office or wherever it is that you're practicing solution focused, unless it's happening in your everyday life, right? So you mentioned that you're here with my wife and my children as well. I guess the example that I would give is each day, the people who are close to us give us an opportunity to see them as brilliant or amazing, and they give us an opportunity to see them as something else. And practicing in seeing them as somebody who is amazing, I think from the very kind of foundational place, right, our children learn how to tie their shoes, and they learn how to do a whole lot of things that are to them at first very, very difficult. And the natural response in a lot of ways is to say, I can't do this, or this is too hard, or whatever. And we as parents see what they can be, right? They can be a shoe tire. They can be a bike rider. And so when they say, this is too hard, or I don't want to do this, we say, I'm pretty sure you can. What if you just tried one more time, right? And I think that that perception, each day, people are saying, don't look at me like I'm amazing. And we have the opportunity to try to push past and say, no, no, you're not going to win this one. I'm going to see you as amazing, right?
I love that. And I think it's so important to really see others as amazing, as heroes, as brilliant. And I also would love to add, because this is one thing that's very close to my heart, that it's, from my point of view, also very important to not only start with others, but to start with ourselves and to see ourselves in our resources and to see where we are amazing, and not in a way that's driven by, I mean, people use this word ego, but in a sense that's driven by love. And if I can build up the love for myself, it's much easier to build up love for others. And by that, just see love everywhere.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think surrounding ourselves with people who also see the best in us and who are willing to share that with us, right? And I think, again, you know Elliot, he is so free with compliments and with kindness and all of those kinds of things that he and I as colleagues, I can't help but try to be better, because he is constantly saying, you are the best at such and such, right? And sometimes I disagree with him. But I think that we as solution-focused people have such an opportunity to surround ourselves with people who are going to be kind to us and who are going to be loving to us. Find those people.
Find your tribe.
Yes.
And we also see you doing that here in your house with your kids, with your wife. And it's been such a pleasure to observe and hear how you interact with your daughter, for example, how you ask her questions. And you told us about how you use solution focus in your everyday life, and also what kind of rituals you have with your kids. So it'd be really great to hear more about that on the podcast too.
Yeah, so one of the things that we were talking about is, so for those of you who don't know me, I have three children. And one of the things that my wife and I really try to do is to spend dedicated time with each one of them. They're each about 3 years apart, so they have different interests and different skill levels. And so by spending time with each one of them individually, we get to kind of meet them where they are. And so one of the things that we have instituted is that at least once a month, we try to spend what we call a late night with them, where the other two children will go to bed like they usually do, and then they get to stay up later and just spend time as the three of us. And kind of the ritual that goes along with that is that we play a game of their choosing. So they get to choose. Sometimes I wish they didn't get to choose, but we'd play a game of their choosing, and then we eat some kind of sweet or treat or something not of their choosing. And then we trade off, and we as parents ask them any three questions that we want, and they in turn then ask us three questions of what they want. And one of the things that we have discovered over the time of doing this, we've probably been doing this now for 6 or 7 years, and just as far as logistics go, we choose the day that they were born. So my oldest daughter was born on the 7th of the month. So on the 7th of each month, that is her late night. And so on the 7th, she asks us her three questions and we ask her our three questions. And we've noticed over time that the types of questions that get asked and that we ask change. Usually with younger kids, it's what's your favorite whatever, right? Or who's your best friend? And they will ask us questions like, well, when you were my age, what did you like to do the best, right? So we have found that they are very much interested in what we did when we were like them. And so I think one of the things that that does is that it helps us to just have an understanding that some of the things we do are the same and some of the things we did are vastly different. And so that kind of always kind of creates a new understanding, I think, of one another. As they get older, their questions change and we purposely choose questions that are much more difficult and sometimes that children probably don't want to talk about with their parents. So we have had all kinds of conversations. We have had conversations about sex and sexuality. We have had conversations about violence. We have had conversations around self-harm. I mean, all of the difficult parenting topics, we have had those conversations. And the reason that we have had those conversations is because they don't experience it as odd or unusual. It's not a formal, we have something that we need to talk to you about. They just know these are the three questions. And so one of the things I have really enjoyed about that is that what could be a defensive, difficult conversation is a very easy, free-flowing conversation. And in return, they have asked us follow-up questions about things that they don't know or they don't understand. And I think in some ways, although that's not the typical solution-focused question, I think the pattern is the same. The pattern is, first we have to get to know and understand one another, and then we move to a place of, there are difficult things that go on in life. But despite those difficult things, how do we want to react and how do we want to kind of live our lives and how do we want to be prepared for what might come down the line next? So I think it's been a very good experience for us.
I love that story and I can't resist the urge to ask what questions were helpful for you to touch those difficult topics around harm, violence, sexuality.
So most often we start just with pure curiosity and we'll say things like, have you ever heard of whatever? So one experience that we talked a little bit about earlier is when my daughter was 11, she was receiving messages from one of her friends who had a friend who was self-harming, and this 11-year-old girl had self-harmed significantly enough that she lost enough blood that she passed out and her parents found her passed out. And then they had to take her to the hospital and she had to get attention, and thankfully everything worked out well and she's okay. But we heard about this, and so then at this late night, we didn't in that moment say, okay, come and talk to us, right? We waited for the late night to come and then we said, hey, have you ever heard of anything called self-harm? And she said, maybe. And we said, well, if you think you have, what do you think it is? And she described this experience of this friend. And she said, well, my friend had a friend who did this. And I think maybe that means that she harmed herself. So then we got to just ask questions around, why might somebody do that? And if you ever felt like that was something that might be an option for you, what would you do? And if you felt like it was something that we might be able to help you with instead of harming yourself in that way, how would you let us know? And so it felt very much like it was just us asking curious questions about how might you manage this, rather than us kind of coming down with education and saying, this is what it is, and this is how you do it, and this is what it means. And so I think, again, I think that's really a consistent, just curious place. And she was able to come up with many of the answers that we probably would have just tried to give her. And she was aware of that.
And also seeing her as hero or expert for her own life, really asking those questions, I think it's just such a big difference to normal conversations where parents just tell their kids how they should, well, deal with the world or behave in the world. Just this curious position of asking, and also asking those questions that you mentioned of how they notice that, or how they would do that, or how they would approach you and things like that.
Yeah, and also picking your daughter in this case up where she is, not thinking about what she could know, but asking what she knows. And this is one thing Dominic and I also realize a lot with Bibiana. She right now, you know, enjoys playing school. And then either she or we are the teachers. And when she comes to school and I'm the teacher, I would ask her, so what would you like to learn? And then she tells me, and then I ask her, what do you know about it? And then I'm amazed with what she comes up and knows about certain topics I would, well, never have thought of that she already knows. And from there you can have a very different conversation than, well, starting, you know, with Adam and Eve or
Yeah, I think too, I'm also thinking about an experience with my son, and he is, I think the word I would use is, he's a very sensitive person. He feels a lot. And he came to one of our late nights and he said, I have a very hard question to ask. And I said, okay, ask. And he said, I heard a word at school, but I don't know what it means. Could you tell me what it means? And I said, sure, I can tell you what it means. And he said a word that I probably wouldn't use. And I said, well, what do you think it means? And he said, well, when they said it, they used it like this. So I think it means this. And he was very, very close, right? And so then I said, you're absolutely right. I think the only thing I would add is this. And so it allowed him to feel confident that he could deduce, right? That he could come up with. And then we got to have the conversation of, what was it like for you to hear that word and know that it meant that thing? And he said, I did not like it. And then we moved to the place of, so then what do you do? What do you do about that? And how do you react in that way? And so again, we didn't have to lecture him. We didn't have to talk about, you know, these are words that we say or these are words that we don't say. He very much already knew all of those things for himself. And thankfully it aligned with what I was hoping. But I think sometimes those difficult conversations are difficult because we have the expectation that parents should be distilling information. And he very much helped me to realize, in a lot of cases, I don't need to. He could feel what was good for him.
What I so much love about your sharing, and I'm very grateful you share that here, is that I also get a sense that timing plays such an important role, and like such an institutionalized day allows to touch those topics when they're maybe not at their most emotional part of the journey, and then you can talk in a very different way about it. And well, like when I think of us, Bibi would have her time to think about it and we would have our time to think about it and then converse in a very, very different way around topics. So this is very inspiring to me.
And it also shows the solution focus is not something you do in a therapist's office or practice or as a coach just for this 1 hour, but it's something you do in your life. And well, you mentioned this different perspective that you have, and you mentioned that you have that in life and that you practice in life. And it's very cool for us to see how this shows in your everyday life. We haven't had the chance to be at one of those late nights, of course. Would not be invited anyway because it's your time with your kids. What we noticed is how many questions you ask during everyday life, during breakfast, for example, today, and small little questions with a solution-focused twist. And I think this is such an important thing to live what we kind of preach in solution focus in our everyday life.
And this also leads me to be curious about how your students at the university notice that you're a solution-focused practitioner, maybe even when you don't specifically teach solution focus.
It's funny that you ask that, because this happens in therapy sessions as well. But oftentimes, my students will kind of go through this stage in the learning process where they get frustrated with the questions, where they will kind of get to the point where they're like, just tell me the answer already. And of course, then I'll come back with, and if I did tell you the answer, what? And then they get really upset about it. But then
we heard you at the conference. I loved it.
But I think that's, again, what I really want to convey to people is, I'm not asking you these questions to be annoying to you, but I'm asking you these questions because of the way that I see you. Because I see you as somebody who is absolutely capable. Because I see you as somebody who can figure out what the answer is. And even if I told you my answer, who's to say that's the answer that's going to fit for you? So you might be equally dissatisfied with the answer that I give. So if I can help you figure out what your answer is, you're going to be wholly more satisfied than if I just tell you what I think the answer is. And so, to be fair, we do go through that stage where they're like, just tell me. But typically, one of the things that I have discovered is I always wait for the end of the semester evaluations. They have to fill out an evaluation of how it went. And almost without fail, they will write something about my questions. And they'll say, the questions were very annoying and they were really hard to answer, but I'm glad I got to answer them. And so to me, I am okay with wading through the frustration. And I think too, in a therapy room, people will say, why are you asking me all these questions? Or they'll say, I don't know, this hasn't happened yet. And the temptation as a clinician, and I think going way back to the beginning of the conversation of how does it change my questions, I would say, this is a weird answer, but in some sense, it doesn't change my questions. It just changes my ability to keep asking the question. Because I think sometimes people get frustrated and they say, could you give up asking on those questions? And it's my job to say, well, if I just asked for a little bit longer, what would you come up with next?
I so much love that. And I think I'm also good in annoying people with my questions on my way. So I even love that more. It's very encouraging.
We always tell the story about Elfie, who loves lists, and how she tortured me with lists. And most
I don't think lists could be torture. I mean, that's surely not possible.
Not possible at all, no. And mostly at the end, she asked me, so what was most helpful and most useful? And I said, these lists. Number 87 or whatever it was.
And talking about questions, in one of your research projects, you're currently microanalyzing questions and presuppositions of those questions. And it would be lovely to hear a bit more about this project.
Yeah, so I'm working on this project with, some of you might know, Paula Lang. She and I are working on this project also with one of my students, and his name is Cecil Walker. And so the three of us are looking at presuppositional questions, and we're starting to identify some of the types of presuppositions. And I'm not going to get into the weeds around what all of the types are, but one of the things that I find particularly interesting about this is that we are discovering that sometimes our presuppositions are drawn from what our clients are saying, right? We say, if that continued, what would you notice next, right? And so that's clearly a presupposition drawn from what it is that they were talking about. Other times, we ask them to consider the opposite. And we say, this is that the famous instead question, right? If that wasn't there, but there was something there instead, what would you begin to notice? And in some sense, we, by asking that kind of a question, we change the trajectory of what their focus is, right? And going back to that example that we used around tying their shoes, right? If the child says, I can't tie my shoes, right? And we said, but if somehow you were able to tie your shoes and you're not even quite sure how that happened, what would let you know that you're a shoe tire, right? We change their perspective from a non-shoe tire to a shoe tire simply by asking one question. And I would say the other thing that we have noticed is sometimes we ask things that are completely unrelated to what the client was talking about at all. And I think, as we mentioned before, one of the most famous of those is a miracle, right? The client never talks about very rarely will talk about a miracle, but we introduce a miracle and we say, if a miracle were to happen, what difference would that make to you? And I think just knowing those differences helps us in the moment to make decisions. Is this a time where I need to continue the line of thought that they're on? Is this a time where I should shift and help them navigate to becoming a shoe tire? Or is this a time where I should introduce something brand new? And very rarely would I say, do we introduce something brand new, but there are times. And so when we understand that we have a role and that we, I think this is where it comes back to co-construction, right? Co-construction doesn't mean that we just follow aimlessly behind our client. Co-construction means that we contribute something to that. So when we understand what our contributions can be, then we can be meaningful and purposeful about putting them in places that I hopefully are useful.
We're very curious what you find out, and also when it will be published.
I have no idea. It's a very long process. It'll probably be at least a year from now before it even sees the light of day.
And that's one thing that most people don't see. They only see the results, and the results are mostly very clear, and I can just take them and do something with them. And mostly what happened to me with a lot of those results that came out of microanalysis, mostly it's like, oh yes, of course, like that. Like, I've known that forever, but it was just brand new now here. But most people don't see how much effort and how much work it is to do this, and we're so grateful that people like you are doing kind of this groundwork and really contribute to the community with those important distinctions that we can really talk differently about solution focus and also decide differently in our conversation. So thank you very much for doing that.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you.
So, and for everyone who wants to learn more about Adam's work on presuppositions and also Kati Hankowski's work around it, listen to the SFIO podcast, and we will link it in the resource section of this podcast on www.sfontour.com/simplyfocuspodcast, and then go to episode number 57.
Adam, you're on your solution-focused journey, and that goes back quite some years, and you've learned so many things on your way. So if there's one thing you say that was important for you to discover on your journey, and that might also be important and relevant for our listeners because it might make a difference for them, what could that be?
To narrow down to one thing, I think I would say, this is a nerdy answer, but I would say language. I would say the more I understand language and the more I try to listen exactly to the client and the more I try to understand their meaning of the word rather than what I think the word means, the closer I can get at being helpful in a way that means something to them. And so I would say much of my research has focused on how language is used. Much of what we promote as trainers is to practice and to find somebody who you can show your work to and say, tear this apart in the most minuscule level. And so I would say the more I can understand how I communicate and how I hear other people, the better I am going to be at when that moment comes to ask the right question because I'm listening so closely to them. And so I would say, I guess, practice language.
What a great message. Thank you. And now let's come to the challenge of the week.
Yeah, so I've been thinking, somebody I think asked me this question at the conference, but it came back to me during this conversation, and it's going to be seemingly mundane. But I would say, find some person that you don't know. And that can be somebody at the grocery store. That can be, you know, if you're taking an Uber or a cab, it could be the driver. If it's, you know, the person that's taking your ticket in an airport, spend that 5 minutes that you have with them and practice finding out about their brain. Brilliance. Ask those questions that help you to say, you know, what do you do best? How did you get good at that? Why is that the thing that came to mind? Right? And see if you can ask question after question again, kind of get to that place where you're annoying them with how many questions you're asking about their greatness. And if you can do it with somebody that you don't know in 5 minutes, you can do it for an hour with somebody that you really care about.
Wow. So let's go out and practice tonight.
Thank you very much, Adam, for being here with us. And thank you, everyone out there, for listening to our podcast. And as usually, we are very curious and we will stay curious and keep asking you about commenting in our comment field, what inspired you about the conversation and what difference this made for your life. So please go to the comment field of this podcast number 57 and comment on www.sfontour.com/simplyfocuspodcast and then go to episode number 57.
Thank you again and goodbye.
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 Wow, what a great episode again. Do you also like the Simply Focus podcast? Then help Elfie and Dominic spread the word. Give the Simply Focus podcast a 5-star rating on iTunes, Google Play, and other platforms. Plus, don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And share your thoughts and inspirations with others. Comment at www.sfontour.com/simplyfocuspodcast. And then go to this episode. This was Simply Focus Podcast with Elfie Cherney and Dominic Godet, your podcast for a life in joy and ease.